Welcome to News Talking. This is D.G. Martin. Walt Brinker is a retired U.S. Army officer. He's widely known in the Fayetteville area for providing free of charge roadside assistance to motorists. It affects us here in this area because it's along I-95. Because of his experience, he's put together a book called Roadside Survival, Low-Tech Solutions to Automobile Breakdowns. And so I persuaded him, and he's agreed to come and visit with us by telephone here in Chapel Hill to talk about his book and also about some tips that he might have for some things that put us out of business on the road, mechanical problems, and also about how to maybe things that we can do to prepare in advance to eliminate some of the things that might cause us difficulty on the road. Walt Brinker, thanks very much for joining us.
DG, thanks for having me.
You are a retired Army officer, and we were just talking before we got started. You got three sons also in the Army, and I was stunned that after your retirement, instead of just settling down, you've become sort of an angel of mercy on the highway. Tell us how that got started.
I can trace it back to when I was at Command and General Staff College, when I was still in the Army, back about 1980. I saw a woman with the hood of her car popped up, and so I went over to see what the problem was, and her engine had died. And so she needed a jump start, so I gave her a jump start. And it was the Christmas season, and so what struck me was two things. Number one was how relieved she was at being back on the road. The second thing was how good I felt doing it. And so I said, well, I've got to start doing more of this. And so I then began looking for cars in distress. But I quickly realized that cars needed help for things besides just a jump start. And so I began acquiring skills and tools and experience to diagnose common problems, simple problems, and also the ability to get them back on the road. And so I began, over time, just doing more and more and more of it. And I got to be pretty good at it. And I figured, wow, I need to share this with other people because there are 200 million drivers in the country, and every year AAA gets about 30 million calls for help. And I can tell you that's only a small fraction of the number of people that break down every year.
Wow.
And I decided, what better way to do that than by writing a book and that's my best shot at getting to all those 200 million drivers.
Well, in your book, you highlight it with stories of your experiences, the kinds of challenges that you've run into as you tried to assist drivers who've been immobilized on the road. And I guess the main thing is this: people who need a jump stop. That's something that all of us can help with if we have the right equipment to do that, I guess.
Oh, yeah. This is not rocket science. Now, jump starts are not even the most common problem. The most common problem is related to tires. Three-quarters of people that I find out there in stop for have got some kind of a tire-related issue. They've had a blowout. The tread has come off their tire, or the tire is just flat, and they can't drive on it anymore. And the other 25% of people I stop for are related to out of gas, the engine overheats, the car just cuts off and will not restart, or the driver is locked out of his vehicle. And so three-quarters of all those stops are tire-related. The other 25% are the other ones I just mentioned. And so there's quite a spread there.
Well, that's interesting to me, Walt, because I would have guessed that that your stops, would like the first one, would have been that there would be many of them that would relate to a problem with the battery or the electric system.
Oh, there are. I'd say maybe close to 10% have got something to do with the electrical system. And typically it's the typical thing is the battery's gone dead, or either the battery's gone dead or the connection to the battery is loose, not permitting the battery to feed juice to the ignition system.
So then it
boils down to a loose battery clamp.
You mentioned that, and I thought you had in your book, you go into a little bit of detail about what some of those problems might be with the loose battery clamp and how you worked out ways in which you can overcome those problems. Will you talk about those problems just as an illustration of the specificity with which you lay it out in your book?
By the way, most of these solutions that I come up with are learned the hard way. You know, the first time I encountered it, I could not solve it. You know, I thought about it, went back and did some research, and picked up a few gizmos and tools, and I was able to do it from then on. But the one you talked about with the battery thing is, when the battery dies, usually it dies because the alternator has stopped feeding it juice, or sometimes it dies because it just has a bad cell. Typically, it's the alternator doesn't it stopped recharging the battery, and so the battery then just depletes without being recharged constantly, feeding the ignition system in the stereo and the car and the headlights and stuff. Mm-hmm. And then once the battery's dead, you don't get juice to the spark plugs either, so the car stops. But one of the most common reasons after running out of gas that people's cars just cut off is nothing more than a loose battery clamp on the, where the clamp actually grabs the post of the battery. And I found that many times you can tighten it up just by having the correct wrench and just tightening up the nut that holds the clamp on the post. But sometimes if you tighten it all the way down, that it's still loose. You can still wiggle it with your finger. The test is, if you can grab that clamp and it moves on the post, then that's probably the problem right there. And so sometimes when you can't get it any tighter by simply tightening the bolt, the nut there, what I do is I just remove the clamp from the battery, and I've got a stash of paper clips in a bag in my car, and I'll take a paper clip and unfold it and then snip off about an inch-long segment of paper clip, sometimes two segments of 2 1-inch segments, and I'll slide those pieces of paperclip between the clamp and the post of the battery, and that adds just enough more bulk where the clamp will grab onto the battery tight enough to have a good enough connection to keep on feeding the ignition system with juice.
So that works. I mean, that works even though your paperclip segment would keep part of the connection from being made. The rest of the connection is tight enough to make up for all of that, and you got a secure, workable link between the battery and the things it needs.
That's right. And the clamp's got to go all the way down to the battery. It's got to be. And so I end up tapping it down with a hammer, so it gets down.
Uh-huh.
So the clamp, and the piece of paper clip go all the way down to the battery itself. Now, you can do that with a nail also. Some people have said, well, I just use a nail for the same thing. That's true, you can. Just tap a nail in there. And the clamps or the post of batteries is often soft enough, a metal, where you can actually squeeze the paperclip into the metal of the battery when you tighten it down real tight.
The other thing that you mentioned in that section of your book about a car where the electrical system is not functioning right, and you mentioned that sometimes that it's a problem that you can't really fix on the road. It's the alternator's gone bad on you.
That's right.
And that just keeps the battery from charging, I guess.
That's correct.
So
the alternator's job. Go ahead.
No, well, so here's where I am. I'm dumb. I'm thinking, well, that's just too bad. We'll just go get the tow truck. But then you said, no, wait a minute. If you got a jump start, you can go ahead and charge that battery in the disabled car. You can charge that battery, and although the alternator doesn't work, you've got enough charge in the battery to get you to a few miles to a service station or someplace where you can get your alternator fixed.
Now, a jump start works only when the alternator's working, because you know, once the engine's moving, all the parts are going around, the alternator is activated, and it's providing juice to the battery.
Right.
And it's still going to the ignition system. But if the alternator dies, then it can't do that. And so the alternator then is out of the picture. Then what happens is you can charge a battery in that car with the alternator of another car using jumper cables from the good car to the bad car.
Uh-huh.
That's what happens. So I've done that 30 or 40 times.
Now, do you have to hook it up? You have to hook it up differently from just a regular jump start?
You hook it up just like you do a jump start. And what you do is just let it. But the trick is you got to sit there and let it let the charging car's engine run for about, I give it usually 10 minutes or so, so that my alternator is charging the other guy's battery via my jumper cables for at least 10 minutes. I give it sometimes 20 minutes, and that'll give it, in daytime, it'll give it enough juice, assuming the battery's in decent shape. It'll give it enough charge where that car's battery can provide enough juice to the ignition system of that car in the daytime to drive it up to 40 miles. Now, at night, when you use the headlights gobble up a lot of juice out of that battery, and so the range is reduced to about 8 miles.
Well, what can you, if you just got a bad battery, a battery that's dead, is there any way you can get the car going and get it to a place where you can replace the battery?
If the battery is bad, but the alternator's good, once you jump start it, it'll keep on running because the alternator's providing the juice then. If you turn the car off, then you can't restart it because the battery is not able to activate the starter, which in turn gets the entire engine cranking.
Well, if you join us late, we're visiting with Walt Brinker. We're talking about his book, Roadside Survival, Low-Tech Solutions to Automobile Breakdowns. He and I'll be right back. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. I'm visiting with Walt Brinker, the author of Roadside Survival, Low-Tech Solutions to Automobile Breakdowns. If you joined us late, Walt is a retired Army officer whose hobby is helping people. I mean, his service project is that he looks out for people on the highways who might need roadside assistance to get going again, and he provides it. He's collected some of the experiences that he's had into this book, Roadside Survival, and he's sharing some of those tips with us. Walt, thanks again for coming. You said, I thought we were through with the electric system, but you say there's more to jump starting than I've been able to get than we've talked about before. What else do we need to know about jump starting?
Well, there's several little things, but the major thing is this, is in the choice of jumper cables. Now I've got a portable jumper battery that provides juice to my compressor as well. It's got a 12-volt plug which I use to power my compressor when I'm pumping up a tire. But also it's got jumper cables on it which will jump start a small engine with a dead battery or a bigger engine with a weak battery, but not a big engine with a dead battery. And so then you got to go. I got to bring out the heavy artillery, my big jumper cables, the 20 footers, the 2-gauge real fat copper wire jumper cables, and that imparts the max amount of juice from my battery and my alternator to the other car's battery. And an example to show the difference between the skinny ones you find in a lot of these kits you can buy at like at Walmart and stuff that they're prepackaged. Batch of stuff that to use to bail yourself out. They'll have short, skinny jumper cables. Well, one time, here's an example to illustrate what I'm talking about. There's a Walmart near Hope Mills down to where I live that whenever I go there, I can almost always count on finding a customer. Well, one time I saw a car with his hood popped up, so I parked next to it by design to see if I could help the guy. And it turns out that I was going to lend him my tools. He didn't need the tools. He was going to change a belt, which drove his alternator, because the belt had broken. And so I said, fine, I went in, bought my stuff, came back out, and he had the belt back on, but he said, you know, my battery's dead because my daughter drove this car here without the alternator working and charging the battery, so the battery's dead. Can you give me a jump start? So I said, okay, cool. Went back and got out my portable jumper battery and took it over there and tried to jump it, and the car clicked, and it wouldn't quite turn over. I said, okay, that's fine. I'll go back and get my big ones. And so I was walking back to my car, to my trunk, to get my big cables out, and a guy with a Ford Explorer pulls up nose-to-nose with this other car, saw what was going on, so he whipped out his skinny ones and ran the short, skinny cables from his battery to the car that we were trying to get started, and it wouldn't work. And so, by that time, I'd walked back with my big cables. I said, let's try these. And so we hooked them up to his car, just like he had before with the skinny ones, and it fired right up. A dramatic example of the difference in performance of thick cables, which are very efficient at transmitting juice, compared to the skinny ones.
That was a real important lesson for me because I'm a cheapskate, and I think I can get the thin, what do you call it, the number four cables for...
Number four is actually pretty good. The long cables, the 20 footers, that's the only way to go if you want to have a lot of flexibility, like going over a car. When I stop for a car on a highway, normally on an interstate, you can't go nose to nose because you can't maneuver your car to get that way, and you can't even go side by side many times because the drop off is too steep. So I need to park in front of the car, pull up so there's only a couple inches left between my car and his, and run my cable from my battery over my car to his battery and do it that way. But normally the 20-foot cables are at least 4-gauge, and one better is 2-gauge.
So
the lower the number, the fatter the cable.
Well, help me with being a cheapskate, because I would go in and buy the thin cables you know, a 6 foot thin cables, pay $6 or something for them. And you'd say you're going to be disappointed because lots of times they're not going to do the job. Now, what is it? This number, is it number two gauge? Two gauge, 20 foot cable.
Number two gauge. The lower the number, the fatter the copper.
That's what I'm saying.
Wire.
So I want to get the best. I want to get the most assured, like you got.
The best you can buy commercially, as far as I know, are the two gauge. You can get those. Walmart sells them for about $50, $55 or so. You can buy them at a regular car parts store like O'Reilly's or places like that for about the same amount of money. And the expensive part is the copper, but the copper is what does the job.
I guess what I'm saying is that being cheap and wanting to pay $10 or something instead of the $50 is going to be a big disappointment, that when I'm out there trying to jumpstart my car and the thin cables don't work, I wish that I'd gone for the $50 for this.
That's right.
For the thick cables. That was
then you got to pay for a tow, you know. So, look at the long term, you know.
Well, now what else about the batteries? Have we missed anything?
To keep the battery clamps clean. A lot of times they'll accumulate over time some crud on them, some white, bluish type crud or greenish crud. That is an insulator between the clamp and the post, and you don't want that.
So
often you ought to take those clamps off and clean them with a wire brush. There's a $5 tool that has got a device that goes over the post to clean the post of all that crud, and another piece that goes through the clamp to clean the junk out of the clamp.
If you don't want to,
and one more thing is the wrench to use to keep that clamp tight. You can't use a monkey wrench with a real big fat head on it. You need the wrench to get is called a combination wrench. That means on one end of the wrench it's an open design. The other one is a box that fits over the entire nut. And the range of sizes of those wrenches for cars is from 8 millimeters all the way up to 13 millimeters. Most of them are 10 millimeter. But if you go to a car parts store and ask them for the right size wrench, they'd be glad to go out and check and get the right size for you and sell you a wrench for $10. That $10 wrench is worth its weight in gold when you're out there. And keep that wrench in your glove box.
Well, now, if you want to, can you mention the cleaning tool, the $10 cleaning tool that you can use to clean the post and the clamps. Now, can you do that? Is there any other way to do that? Can you do that with a screwdriver or something?
I've heard people say, well, I'll just pour Coca-Cola on it. Well, I've never done that, and I don't want to have Coca-Cola, you know, stains all over the inside of my hood. And so it's a very simple way to do it, just to unscrew the nut, take the clamp off, and put this wire brush device on there. And it's so simple. It's to clean it off. It's almost not even worth talking about.
Now, ready to move on to something else, or we got more
sure.
on the batteries and the electric system?
We've done a good job on electrical and batteries.
You mentioned tires is being one of the leading causes for cars being disabled along the highway. What can
tires
you refer to?
Tires are huge. Three quarters, like I said, I've done something like easily more than 2,000 of these assists. Three quarters of the people I stop for have got a tire issue. They had a blowout, or the tread has come off the tire, or they just have a flat tire. And there are many issues that cascade on down from just the start right there. Among them is the people don't have in their car with them many times a spare tire. Most cars, now a lot of new cars don't come with a spare tire. They got run flat tires that don't need a spare tire. I say that's crazy, because if you run over some debris in the road, it's going to tear up those run flat tires and they're not going to work. And so then you have no spare tire and they don't come with any tools either. And so there you are. Your only option is to get a tow or have someone take that tire to a tire store or the wheel with the tire on it, the flat, and go to a tire store someplace and get a new one put on or bring it back out to you.
What do you do?
I've done that many times for people also when I have time, but you can't count on that. And but what I'm talking about, cars that are designed to have a spare tire, they don't have run flat tires. A lot of folks, for some reason, don't have a spare tire in their car. Or they don't have the tools to jack is incomplete. Or they don't have all the part to the device to crank up the jack. Or they don't have the lug wrench. You know, I've seen it all. And spare tires, when they do have a spare tire, 80% of the time, 80% of the time, that spare tire that's in the car is either flat or lacks enough pressure to be useful. 80%.
Well, that puts you in a bad position if you're trying to help somebody who's in this condition. You don't have very much to offer, do you?
Oh, I do. I have a 12-volt compressor in my car that is really good at pumping up flat tires, and I do that all the time. That my tire gauge and my 12-volt air compressor are the two most frequently used tools I've got, and it's just amazing. Just about 2 days ago, matter of fact, I was driving around Fayetteville, and I was approaching I-95, and I got behind a new Ford Explorer that I could see that his right rear tire was low. I could see the tread bulging out on the right rear tire. And so I pulled aside him and tooted my horn, and I pointed down to his tire and got him to turn get off the road. And he went out and looked at it and said, "By God, you're right, that thing is low." And I checked it with my pressure gauge. It had less than 20 pounds in it. Should have had about 35. And so I pumped it up on the spot right there on the side of the road. I said, "Hey, my advice to you is get this thing to a tire store now and have them fix that leak, because the tire's leaking." And he had planned to drive another 60 miles to Raleigh on I-95 with a tire. Or he would have if I hadn't stopped him, and he likely would have had a blowout.
Well, can you drive up to a service station now and have any confidence that they can fix the leak in the...
Not a service station. No, you'd have to take it to a... Walmart, for $10, will repair a tire leak. They'll take the wheel off the car. They'll take the rubber off the... They'll find the source of the leak. Often it's a nail or a screw like that. And the way they do it is they'll put air in the tire and they'll squirt soapy water on the tire and look for air bubbles. I've got a bottle of soapy water in my trunk also. I do the same thing. But you look for the air bubble, and that's where the leak is.
Can you fix a leaky tire on out of your storehouse of tools?
Yes, I can.
Tools? How do
I've
you do it?
I've got a plug kit. A $10 plug kit consists of two different tools that have a handle on it. The one tool is like a reamer. First, you got to pull the nail out or the screw out with a pair of pliers. You pull it out with a pair of pliers, then you use the reamer and you ream out that hole where the nail was to kind of roughen the edges up. There's another device which looks like the non-sharp end of a needle. It's got a device where you put a worm through it. It's about a 3 or 4 inch plug, and you stick that down into the reamed out hole in the tire and yank it back out when it's about 2/3 down, and then the plug stays in the tire. Then you trim off the part that's outside the tire, and then you pump it up and you've got a temporarily repaired tire. Other people like to use stuff like Fix-A-Flat, the liquid sealant, but there are problems with that because if you put that stuff in there, you got to drive the car right away. Otherwise, all that glop that gets in there is going to harden in one ball, and the tire will be out of balance. So you got to drive it initially to get it distributed inside the tire so it's evenly spread around so it doesn't cause the wheel to get out of balance. And then both of these methods should be considered as a temporary fix, not a permanent fix. And when you take the wheel to the tire store to have them put the patch on it, they'll often charge you more money because it's a mess inside that tire with all that Fix-A-Flat stuff in there.
Well,
so I don't like Fix-A-Flat. I've plugged many a tire with that simple plug kit.
We're visiting with Walt Brinker. He's the author of Roadside Survival, Low-Tech Solutions to Automobile Breakdowns. He and I will be right back. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin, and my guest is retired Army officer Walt Brinker, and he's the author of a book called Roadside Survival, Low-Tech Solutions to Automobile Breakdowns. And all this is based on his experience as an angel who drives the highways down there near Fayetteville and around, and if somebody has a problem that has caused their automobile to stop working, he stops and tries to help them, and in many cases does help them using a set of tools or a set of knowledge that he describes in his book. And Walt, you said earlier that tires are the most common cause of automobile breakdown on the highways in your experience, and I don't want to leave the tires before we've learned everything that we can from you about the problems that you might encounter and how you might prevent them. And you've got some pretty good ideas about preventive things, simple things that can be done to lessen the chances that you might have a problem with your tires on the road.
Well, the first thing is, DG, when you buy tires, buy new tires, buy decent tires, and buy them from, my advice to buy from a tire store that has a nationwide chain. So if you have a problem away from home, you can go to another store in the same chain and get a replacement without entering the system and just buying a new tire off of a guy that you never even saw before. And I would say ensure that your tires are in good condition, not on your car. If you can be sure that the four tires rolling on your car or your pickup or your van, whatever it is, are in good shape, the chances of getting in trouble are vastly reduced. I would say that you should take those, when you buy new tires, buy the plan that gives you a free warranty replacement if the tire fails somehow. Let's say you hit a curb or you have a blowout. As I did about 2 months ago, I was on Interstate 20 east of Atlanta going home. I had a blowout at 75 miles an hour, and I looked in the mirror to see what I've hit, if I'd hit something, and I couldn't see that I hit anything. It sounded like a shotgun had gone off inside my car, and I felt a little thump. Well, what happened was the inside sidewall of my tire, of my right rear tire, had blown out. So I pulled over, and I saw right away what it was. And I was able to change my own tire in about 10 minutes. The biggest hassle I had was getting all the enough junk out of my trunk where I carry all this gear to get to my spare tire. Well, you know, that said, I got it changed real quickly. But then, right away, following the advice that I have in the book, my priority changed right there from getting home by the most direct route to replacing that flat tire. And so I bought the tires at Pep Boys. And I went to my GPS and put in Pep Boys and found the closest Pep Boys store in the direction I was going. Drove there, and I got a free replacement for that tire that blew out. And then I realized that the spare tire I put on the car was 9 years old. By looking at the DOT number on the sidewall, you can tell how old the tire is. Let's say if it says 2003, the last four characters in that DOT sequence. If it's 2003, that means the tire was manufactured in the 20th week of 2003. Now, you shouldn't have a tire riding around on it that's older than 6 years. So that tire was too old. It was well over 6 years old. And I thought, I feel like a fool if my spare tire blows out on me here. It was made in 2006, which means it was nine years old. And I thought, I feel like a real dummy after all this preaching I've been doing about not having old tires. My tire blew out, so I luckily did not blow out on the way to the tire store, and I got my new tire. Then, but when I got back to Fayetteville, the first thing I did was I went down and I got a replacement donut tire for my car, and I made sure that the replacement donut tire was not more than a year old.
What is a donut tire?
And so I got a replacement donut, and now the car is up to snuff on tires, 100%.
Well, what is a donut tire?
The space saver, the spare tire.
So it's a little tire.
Yeah, it's a little tire, yeah. It's a lot. Almost all cars these days, except for large pickups and vans, provide Jeeps provide they call it a space saver tire, or nicknamed donut. And those tires are typically smaller than the regular tires are, but to perform right, they've got to have 60 pounds of pressure in them. That's more than most regular tires do. Most regular tires on cars and pickups take from 30 to 35 pounds per square inch. But the spare tire, to maintain its shape when it's got all that load on it, and being a smaller tire, requires the full 60 pounds of pressure in there. And I'll tell you, as I said before, 80% of spare tires are either flat or lack the pressure to perform correctly. And so I end up doing a lot of pumping up of spare tires. I can count on a spare tire being low on pressure.
Well,
that's almost a given.
Well, you mentioned that you had a warranty on your tire that had the blowout, and you took it and got a brand new tire without any reduction for road wear or any or use or anything. There's no declining amount. I've encountered tire warranties that aren't really all that valuable because they quickly are less valuable than a replacement, than giving you a new car, a new tire.
You know, to tell you the truth, I don't recall exactly what the terms were, but it seems to me that it was a free replacement. Now, I may be wrong about that.
No, well, that's great.
But it was certainly a whole lot less than buying a new tire.
The full cost of a new tire. The other thing is, do those warranties cover only the failing of the tire? Do they cover road hazards or?
Yeah, they cover all that. Road hazard, like if you hit a curb, if you scrape along a curb and cut the sidewall of a tire, you can't put a patch on a sidewall. You can't repair the sidewall. You can only repair the tread part of the tire.
Mm-hmm.
And so if the sidewall gets cut, that tire is worthless. It's a tire that should not be used, and it's dangerous to drive on.
We're visiting with Walt Brinker. We're talking with him about his book, Roadside Survival. He and I'll be right back. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. I'm visiting with Walt Brinker. We're talking about problems with cars that make them stop when you don't want them to stop on the highway, and things that you can do about it both then and maybe a few things that you can do to lessen the probability that you'll have a disabling condition in your car. And Walt, we've been talking about tires, and you say you got more about tires.
Oh, there's a lot more, but there's a few more things that are really need to be talked about. That is the most common reason for blowouts is underinflation, which means the tire is too low on air. And so my advice is develop a habit. So every time you get in your car, if you walk up to your car, just do a quick check, an eyeball check of the tires to spot any gross underemployment. Under inflation, and don't drive on the tire if that's the case. And that's why if you have a 12-volt compressor in your car, you can tune your tires up on the spot. If you see one's low, you can tune it up right there. And if it's low on air, it's probably got a leak. You probably picked up a nail or a screw or something, so he needs to go to a tire store to get that fixed. But it can get you to the tire store without ruining the tires by driving on a flat tire. Listen to your car. The car will talk to you when it's about to fail. It's going to, you have a pull to one side, some mushy handling, or vibration, and those are all indicators of a low tire. And because the low tire will pull harder than a regular tire will, it'll pull to one side. Weak engine starts, or dim lights, or chirping when you try and start the car indicate a low battery or a bad connection with the battery. If your temperature gauge reads hot, or you have warning lights come on and you smell funny smells, chances are you're about to have an overheating issue. Now, if you have unusual noises from the wheels, brakes, or engine, then you have some other issues. Fluid leaks. Look on when you move your car. Just notice if it deposited any fluids there, like leaking water or leaking coolant for the engine. And for Pete's sake, if you do notice that, take it to a mechanic and get it checked out before you get marooned out there on the side of the road.
Well, that's good advice. Walt, a couple of other things just real quickly. You mentioned that one of the problems you encounter pretty often on the highways is that people have locked themselves out of their car.
Oh, yeah.
What's your advice about that?
Well, my advice there is, what I can do is I've got the tools to get into a car. I don't advise, that's an art, and I'm not going to talk about that. But the way you can prevent that in the first place is to have a magnetic box that can hold a key in it that you can hide under your car. And I don't advocate getting a key with a transponder in it and put that under your car because they're pretty expensive. You don't want to lose that key. Although I've never lost a key doing this 25, 30 years, I've never lost a key. I never lost a box. But what I advocate is you can go to practically any car and have its door lock unlocked with a key that does not have a transponder in it. I call it a dumb key with no chip or anything in it, and that'll unlock the door. Okay, now if you go to the airport, park your car, leave the car in the garage for 2 weeks, come back, and you left your dome light on. You come back and your battery's dead. Your fob is not going to work. Nothing's going to work. Nothing remote's going to work because your battery's dead, and you can't even set up a jump start until you can unlock the door to pop the hood. And so that's where having a key that you can buy for $10 or less at your dealer that'll work on your door only to unlock the door. That's where you can avoid staying locked out of your car.
Well, now some of these new cars don't even have keys. They've got the little transponder, whatever it is that you carry around in your pocket, and you don't even need a key to put in the ignition.
That's right,
or to put in the door.
But if the battery dies, none of that works.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is, when your battery dies and it doesn't work, What are your options? How do you get
in? Every car that I know of has got a little slot by the driver's door handle where you can actually unlock that door mechanically with a dumb key.
And you should have that dumb key. Your advice is get that dumb key made and put it in a box or a little magnetic
under
box
your car,
under your car.
And you want to put it on a flat surface so it's a good stick without any insulation for rust because that insulation will lessen the attraction of the magnets. Put that on a vertical surface, not on the bottom because it could get scraped off by if you go into some dirt, it could scrape the key off. But put it somewhere on top of something or on the side of something where it's not exposed to a ground that may be rushing along the bottom of the car.
That'll
save you right there.
Yeah. We've just scratched the surface on the kinds of things the practical advice that you give in your book. But I want to stop right now. We just got a minute or two left. And I bet you've just got some great stories of people that you met or situations that you encountered. What's the most memorable occasion in which you provide this angelic, cost-free service to stranded motorists down there in the area where you live off I-95 near Fayetteville?
There are so many, and the best ones take too much time. So I'll give you an example of an easy one that I've done probably 30 times. We haven't talked yet about running out of gas, but typically when you run out of gas, it's on the level. And the person, when they run out of gas, pull on the interstate. They'll pull over on the shoulder, which typically is slanted to the right. So if you add a gallon of gas to that tank, the gas is going to probably pool in one corner of the gas tank and not reach the intake that goes to the engine. And so what I do is if it doesn't work by putting the gas in all by itself, then I'll just open the passenger door. I'll stand on the frame, and I'll just jump up and down. I tell them to crank it. And while I'm jumping up and down, the gas in the tank is sloshing around, and it finds the intake, and the car starts.
Wow.
That's magic.
Wow.
People can't believe it. I've done that at least 30 times.
No, that's a great...
I call that rock the car.
Well, now, Walt, along those lines, you advise everybody to have a gas can or one-gallon gas can in the car.
An empty gas can.
But now you say it's empty. Well, what good does an empty gas tank
do? I carry a full 2-gallon gas can because I take the risk of, I do this enough, and I have it in a tub in the forward part of my trunk where it's not likely to get crushed if somebody hits it. Plus, it's a real high-speed gas can. It's a OSHA Type A safety can, which is very sturdy. But if you have a 1-gallon can, what you can do is, if you run out of gas, if a highway patrolman comes by, they can't carry gas in their car. He'll take the gas can, go to a gas station, bring it back to you full of gas, and you can go through the refill and rock the car thing, get your car going. Or if you have to, you can walk yourself to the next exit where there's hopefully a gas station and get gas that way. Or a good Samaritan may come along who can take the empty can for you and bring it back full of gas.
Well, have you met any interesting people?
Oh, I have met literally doctors, lawyers, no Indian chiefs, FBI agents, bank presidents, real estate agents, Army colonels, personal trainers, and just the whole spectrum of humanity. And that's part of the fun of this thing, is you never know who you're going to meet out there.
Do you advise the rest of us to consider adopting your hobby of helping people, or are there some risks that you'd caution us about before we do
well,
that?
Well, there are some risks. I've got a good eye for what's dangerous and what's not dangerous. I don't stop for everybody. If it looks too dangerous, I don't stop, although I've stopped at night for many people. If it's a family, it's a lot better bet than a group of young males. But I've stopped for almost everybody. But if the advice in the book will enable, if you take the advice by acquiring a few goodies, and we haven't talked about those yet.
About your tools, you mean? Yeah, you got to stock up on your tools.
The tools, and that's a whole list of stuff that we could talk about sometime. But that is if you have that stuff and you know how to use it, you can bail yourself out of most common situations that will otherwise make you a stranded motorist. You're broke down, but you're not stranded yet because you can bail yourself out.
Well, Walt Brinker, thanks for your book. Thanks for taking time to talk to us from down there in Cumberland County, and we're grateful to you for sharing that wisdom with us both ways on this program and in your book, Roadside Survival. Great to talk to you.
If your guests want to, they can go to my website, roadsidesurvival.com, and see a lot more.
thanks. And thanks to you guys for listening. This is D.G. Martin, who's talking. I'll be back here before you know it.